Conditions have been good for growing lush green grass this summer. Weeds have also been thriving. This hour, we'll talk about summer lawn care. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Iowa State University Extension turf grass specialist Adam Toms will be here to talk about summer lawn care. We'll talk about mowing, watering, and weed control. We'll also talk about your choices when it comes to fertilizer. Horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Adam will answer your questions. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at IPRTalk. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and Iowa has turned a beautiful shade of green. Hopefully your lawn is also nice and green. This hour, we're going to talk about summer lawn care, and later on, of course, we'll be answering your questions. And with me today, Iowa State University Extension turfgrass specialist Adam Toms. Hello, Adam.
Hello, Charity.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And I may be even premature to call you Iowa State University Extension turfgrass specialist because you actually don't start your job until July, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So welcome to the show and thank you for joining us. Where are you coming to Iowa State from?
I grew up in Iowa, actually, and then I spent the last 10 years at the University of Tennessee in graduate school.
Well, welcome home then.
Thanks.
All right, let's talk about lawn care. And I think let's start with mowing because, of course, it's something all of us have to do. Many of us dread doing. How often do we have to mow?
Yeah, so typically you want to kind of base your mowing on removing no more than one-third of the leaf tissue. This time of year with the higher temps, you want to raise the mowing height between 3 and 3.5 inches is a good idea for your mowing height. And then you know, you don't want to remove more than one-third of the tissue. So if your goal is to keep the mowing height at 3 inches, when the grass hits 4 inches, you should mow.
All right. So a lot.
Yeah, a lot during this heat.
Now, when you say how short you choose to keep your grass, is there an optimum length to cut it to?
Yeah, the optimum length would be between 3 and 3.5 inches. If you're going to go shorter, you're going to have to mow more often. You're going to start to see the effects of drought sooner, so the grass is going to turn off color quicker, kind of show the brown. If you have an irrigation system, you're going to have to water more often to try to keep it green. So that's kind of why you want to keep it at a little bit higher height.
All right, so the method of cutting it short so you don't have to mow again for a while, that really backfires for you.
Yeah, it does. A lot of people forget that or don't understand that, and so they're actually creating more work for themselves.
Now, this spring, although it was a little dry early on, we've kind of had steady rainfall. How do we decide if it's time to water our lawns?
Sure, there's a couple different things. You know, typically most Iowa lawns are Kentucky bluegrass or Kentucky bluegrass and perennial ryegrass blends, and they have great mechanisms to survive long periods without moisture, and so they'll go off color, and they can live 4 to 6 weeks off color, you know, as a brown-looking turf, and have no negative effects there. When it rains again, they'll green back up. If you don't want that situation happening, then you need to make sure that your yard has about 1 inch to 1.25 inches of water a week, so going out and irrigating to put that on each week would be a good step.
All right. And when you irrigate, what are some of the methods to make sure that you're not wasting water, that you make the most of what you're doing?
Yeah, the best time to irrigate is in the morning between, you know, 5 and 9 a.m. That's, you know, tends to be lower winds, so more of the water is actually hitting the turf, which is what you want, instead of it blowing off into the road. Also has lower temperatures, so you have less evaporation, and it's actually able to soak in, as well as it's better for the turf health. The leaf tissue, as the sun comes up, will dry out, and there'll be less chance of disease. If you water right before dusk at night, which a lot of people do when the wind calms down, then that leaf tissue stays wet all night, and it's a great breeding ground for disease and fungus on your yard. So it's It's always best to try to do it in the morning. And then the other thing is to try to put out, if you're going to irrigate or water your yard, do a half to three quarters of an inch at a time, and then wait 3 or 4 days and then put out the other half to three quarters of an inch, just to kind of let it soak in.
When you choose not to water and it's dry and, you know, things kind of go dormant, is that something that's going to cause long-lasting damage to your lawn, or will your lawn tolerate that pretty well and come back? I know a lot of people don't want to waste water in watering their lawns.
Yeah. You know, periods of drought, like I said, Kentucky bluegrass, which is what most yards have, they have great drought survival mechanisms. So they'll go off color. They'll look brown. You might think they're dead. And if it goes over 4 to 6 weeks, then you might have long-lasting effects of drought. But for the most part, you know, once it starts to rain again, the grass should green up. Again, as it's coming out of the drought, you know, make sure your mowing heights are between 3 and 3.5 inches, so that way you're not putting too much stress on the grass plant. And, you know, as it greens back up, it might take a while at that higher height, but it'll survive through that.
How does the heat affect your lawn?
Yeah, the heat's, you know, actual temperatures aren't necessarily a huge problem. The grasses that we have up here are cool season grasses. So during the heat of the day, they actually close their stomates. And so they kind of shut down their processes of exchanging oxygen and carbon dioxide to conserve water in them. And so high temperatures, basically the plants will shut down earlier in the day to try to, you know, avoid or handle the heat.
Now, of course, a lot of us try to avoid mowing when it's really hot anyway. And as far as air quality, we are recommended not to mow when it's really, really hot in the heat of the day. Does mowing in the heat of the day affect your lawn in any way, or is that neither here nor there?
No, you know, the time of day of mowing isn't really a big issue. Obviously, mowing earlier in the day is easier on the person mowing, and so that's a good thing. Additionally, you know, you have the benefit of mowing earlier in the day. You can kind of knock the dew off the leaves, and so you can have easier way of seeing where you've been in the yard.
How do you feel about mulching lawnmowers versus bagging your grass?
Oh, I'm a huge fan of mulching lawnmowers. Returning the clippings returns nitrogen to the plant that's in the tissue. And so I always suggest to try to mulch and recycle the tissue right back into the yard. It helps with growth in the future, so you have to apply less nutrients. And, you know, then you don't have to deal with the waste either. So as long as you're following the one-third rule of mowing regularly, removing no more than one-third of the tissue, you should have, you know, no problem with a mulching mower, and I would suggest that any time over bagging.
And it's so much easier.
It is. You're done at that point.
And I see a lot less bagging going on. I think that that's a message that's really been getting out in recent years. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. It's been a message that's been getting out. And the other thing is the mower companies have done vast improvements on their mulching blades. They're more aggressive in chopping the clippings up inside, so there's smaller clippings returning. And so it does a better job of, you know, recycling the clippings into smaller particles.
Now, when the weather is good for growing grass, it's also good for growing weeds. What do you recommend as far as weed control goes?
You know, right now, there's several weeds that'll start to show up. Crabgrass is probably one of the most obvious. You've missed your window for a pre-emerge crabgrass, so you'd have to do something post-emergence-wise. What that post-emergence means is that the plant's already germinated, growing in your yard. And so, you know, to find a crabgrass preventer, it's too late, so you'd have to find something that's already, that's labeled to kill it once it's in place. As far as broadleafs go in your yard, I would really suggest trying to wait until the cooler fall months. You're going to have better control and less chance of injuring some of the other ornamentals in your yard as well.
Now, with crabgrass, let's say you missed that window for pre-emergence, does it make sense maybe just to wait and try again next year? Or if you wait, is it going to get out of control?
You know, it's kind of your level of if you can handle the weeds or not. There's great products out there. Mesotrione, Phenoxaprop are some chemical names. Quinclorac, that if it's already germinated and you can't stand the look of the weeds in your yard, you can spray those. You can have, you know, lawn care companies come in and spray them. But, you know, if you can handle a few crabgrass plants in your yard, it's okay to, you know, just kind of let them go and then next spring go out and do a pre-emergence herbicide.
Let's talk about fertilizer. Is that something that obviously we're talking about sort of the quintessential green Kentucky bluegrass lawn right now. Is fertilizer necessary to maintain that?
Yeah, fertilizer is necessary. We don't suggest doing any kind of fertilization right now. It's always best to fertilize in the fall and then again in the spring a little bit of a lower rate. The reasoning behind that is the grass plant doesn't necessarily need a ton of nutrients right now. It's just kind of in survival mode. And then the other fact is in the fall, it helps because the plant actually puts carbohydrates or its food sources down lower in the plant to survive for winter to come out. And so it's best to feed the lawn in the spring and the fall, not so much right now.
And, of course, we've been hearing a lot about nutrients in our water and blue-green algae and things like that. When we fertilize, what kind of steps do we need to take to minimize the impact on the environment?
Yeah, and that's a good question. You know, of course, proper timing, putting out fertility treatments when the grass would actually use that would be a good thing. Getting your fertility rates right, not putting out more than a pound of nitrogen at one time. Additionally, you know, when you fertilize, make sure to take the time to go back and sweep off your sidewalks, put that fertilizer back in the yard, and then, you know, hopefully time it with a gentle rain so that it gets worked into the soil and into the plant instead of, you know, having it run off in any condition where it might be a huge rainstorm and push it off.
What are some of the pitfalls that you see people falling into with fertilizer?
There's slow-release fertilizers and then there's quick-release. And one of the things that I see a lot of times is people use a quick-release fertilizer, which has the tendency to burn the yard, especially if you don't know the amount of fertility that you're applying. And so, you know, if you apply too much fertility with a quick-release, you're going to burn your yard. The other thing that I see periodically is people have drop spreaders for their fertilizers. And when they go back and forth, maybe they don't go two directions, and so then they have streaks of really green and then areas that they missed, which are not quite as green in their yard.
Well, it just looks like the outfield of a great baseball diamond or
something,
right?
It looks like a striping pattern that they've done.
And if you miss that window in the spring or the fall, I mean, do you see people who kind of panic and think, I'm going to do it anyway?
Yeah, you know, there's some people that do that. And if you miss the window, it's fine. Just wait till the fall. Go ahead and refertilize. And then the other thing is, you know, don't double apply in the fall.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with brand new Iowa State University Extension turfgrass specialist Adam Toms. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be joining us in a moment. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension turfgrass specialist Adam Tom, and also Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And it is time to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go to the phones. Rick is on the line. Hi, Rick.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the show. I just want to say real quick, I'm a tractor-trailer driver, and I'm gone 2 to 3 weeks at a time. I only cut my grass once every 3 weeks, but I let all the natural stuff grow, so only about a fourth of my plant life is actually grass. The rest is plantain, wild violets, Pennsylvania pigweed. So the result is my yard stays green year-round. It doesn't matter how bad the drought gets, it's still green. Because it doesn't have, you know, it's not just solid turf grass. And my question is, with something like that, do I need to put any fertilizer on it or just let it keep doing its natural thing?
All right, Adam.
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. you know, in a situation like that, you don't have the time to regularly mow and maintain it, and so there's no need to fertilize it. You know, if you're happy with that, that's great.
All right. Well, Rick, thanks a lot for your call. And of course, I mean, a lot of people want that perfect Kentucky bluegrass lawn. A lot of people also don't care if they have that perfect Kentucky bluegrass lawn, as long as it's green. So there are also people who are actively seeking out alternatives to Kentucky bluegrass. Do you see anything catching on, Adam?
Yeah, there's, several different species of turf grass out there. Tall fescue is becoming more and more popular, and I see more and more bags on the shelves here in Iowa. Even it's, you know, a little bit more of a heat tolerant and drought hardy grass, and they've made improvements from the old forage type tall fescues to turf types, so they are darker color and smaller leaves. Additionally, there's several people that are starting to try some warm season grasses like zoysia grass and Bermuda grass, and those, you know, kind of grow the opposite of our traditional cool seasons. So they grow great in the summer, and then they go off color in the winter months.
All right. Well, Aaron is on the line in Oxford with a related question. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. Actually, what I was calling about, we've been hearing a lot about native turf lately, namely like a 50-50 mix of buffalo grass and blue grama. And I personally have about an acre yard I'm getting ready to plant, and I'm trying to talk my wife into it, but she asked about why don't people mix things like Kentucky bluegrass or other cool season grasses with the native warm season grasses to kind of get the benefit on both seasons. Is there something wrong with that?
Well, they would look a little bit strange. By that I mean,
okay.
By that I mean the Kentucky bluegrass would green up early in the spring when your buffalo grass is still brown. So it would look kind of strange having both green and brown.
Okay.
So they're, and the Kentucky bluegrass is also much more vigorous, and it would tend to crowd out the buffalo grass. So usually they're not compatible. In fact, I had a recent call where somebody had some bluegrass in their buffalo grass lawn, and they wanted to get rid of it. And it's very hard to do because they're both grasses, and there's really nothing selective.
Anything that kills one would kill the other, right?
Right, right. So the only possibility in that case would be to go out very, very early in the spring when the buffalo grass was completely dormant and spot treat with Roundup or glyphosate. So they're just not compatible as far as cool season and warm season together.
Okay, so if you wanted a native turf lawn, would you, you'd just go straight up?
Buffalo grass. And I would say buffalo grass would do better in western Iowa than eastern Iowa. Buffalo grass is mainly grown in central and western Nebraska and Kansas. It tolerates the dry conditions very, very well. If you grow bluegrass in Nebraska, Kansas, you have to irrigate. You simply have to. And so they can't afford to use water to irrigate their lawns, so they've gone to buffalo grass. In Iowa, the biggest problem with growing buffalo grass is we have a lot more precipitation. And because we do, we tend to get a lot of weeds in the buffalo grass. So that is our biggest problem growing buffalo grass in Iowa.
Any recommendations for another native, you know, deep root, stable grass species here besides that, then?
Well, buffalo grass is probably the best native grass as far as a turf grass. Now, you can grow zoysia grass in Iowa. It's not native. It's warm season. It grows very, very thick. It crowds out most weeds very nicely. So that would be a possibility, too, but it's not native.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
All right. So Aaron got his question answered, but are there other alternatives, again, that he should be thinking about?
Well, as far as if they had a huge lawn, they obviously might think, well, I may want to convert some of that to maybe just prairie grasses and wildflowers instead of mowing like 2 acres or 3 acres. They could definitely do that.
All right, let's get back to some more questions. Next up, we've got Rock on the line in Mount Vernon. Hi, Rock.
Hello. I've got a question about mulch mowing versus bag mowing, and if which is more beneficial for the lawn, and are there any pitfalls that need, or at least considerations need to be thought about if you decide to start mulch mowing?
Okay, the choices were mulch mowing and
bagging the clippings.
Sure, that's a good question, Rock. Mulch mowing is what I would recommend from the standpoint that, again, as you cut up the clippings, you're recycling them back into the turf grass in your yard. This releases some nitrogen, so it allows you a little less fertility that you need. The situations that we would recommend for bagging would be, if you've gotten behind on the mowing and the clippings are just so great that when you mow it, you can't see the grass, and that's a situation where the grass is going to suffer because it's not getting light to grow out of it. Additionally, in the fall, we still suggest to mulch mow, chop up the leaves, return those nutrients to the soil, unless you have a situation where there's just so many leaves that you just can't seem to get ahead of it and actually have the grass showing. So I would suggest mulch mowing in any situation that you possibly can.
All right. I think a lot of people love that advice, Adam. So
yeah,
that's great. Here's a question from Greg. Last summer, which was pretty damp here in Story City, we had a significant problem with rust in our yard. Is there anything we can do to help prevent or treat this stuff?
Yeah, rust is, typically shows up in situations where there's a lower fertility and a low amount of nitrogen. So more fertilizer in the spring or in the fall would help with that. The grass can quickly grow out of that. Additionally, mowing helps knock the rust off the leaves.
And does the moisture have something to do with it, though, as he was mentioning?
A little bit, yeah. The rust formation tends to be, in more moist areas.
All right. Let's go back to the phones for another question. Phil is on the line in Clive. Hi, Phil.
Hi, good morning. My question is, when is somebody going to develop a suburban environment acceptable short no-mow grass? That only grows 3.5 inches tall and then I don't have to mow it all the time.
I think that might be called AstroTurf.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
Actually, they've been working on various things for many, many years. When I was a graduate student, they were trying various growth regulators that they would spray on the grass. And their hope was that if they did that, the grass would not grow very much at all, but still stay nice and green. But that just never panned out. So we're still looking for that perfect answer. Haven't found it yet.
All right. And it sounds fairly magical. So, mm-hmm. how close do you think we've gotten?
But there's also artificial turf. So
right. Absolutely.
That works.
All right. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. You can join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. Fred sent this email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org from Corning. Is there any research evidence that sharpening lawnmower blades is really necessary? I can never tell any difference.
Yeah, there's lots of research out there that shows it. The more dull your blade gets, instead of cutting, it's actually starting to tear and not have a nice, crisp edge on the grass blade. So what that relates to then is a situation where it opens up a larger area for disease and insects to move in, starts to affect your yard, as well as the tips of your leaves start to show that they're shredded instead of crisply cut.
All right, here's a question from Pat regarding strawberries, asparagus, and rhubarb. Please give advice on procedures for caring for these crops at the end of their bearing season.
Well, in the case of the asparagus and rhubarb, they should stop harvesting this weekend if they haven't already stopped. And the only thing they need to do basically would be, in the case of asparagus, for example, try to control the weeds as best they can. Go out there periodically if they need to and pull weeds and cultivate. If they cultivate, it should be very shallow. As far as the rhubarb, if it tries to flower, do not let it. Pull out those stalks immediately. And as far as the strawberries, if it's a June-bearing strawberry, as soon as they're done bearing, they should be renovated. And the first thing they want to do is take out the lawnmower again, and they want to mow off the strawberry foliage and rake off that debris, get rid of it, and then go ahead and take a tiller or a spade. And if they're growing in a row, narrow that row down to an 8-inch wide strip. Okay. And then go ahead and fertilize and water and let the plants grow.
All right. Next, here's a question from Andre. He says, I'm losing a tree and would like to replant in the same spot. What are my options and time frames for getting that done?
Well, putting it exactly in the same spot is difficult to do. We don't recommend it. They'll probably have to move a few feet away, maybe 3-4 feet away and plant it. As far as planting a tree, you can basically plant a tree from spring until early fall. So plenty of time.
All right. So, but if he's losing the tree, does he need to cut the tree down before he plants that close?
I think I definitely would. It would make it easier. So they should cut the tree down, have it have the stump ground out, and then go ahead and plant a few feet away.
All right. Here's a question from John. In the next few days, I'll be putting Scott's Weed and Feed on my lawn. I have a vegetable garden and like placing grass clippings around the vegetables. How long should I wait after fertilizing to safely collect and use the grass clippings?
Well, typically we say that if they're going to use a broadleaf herbicide on their lawn, they want to mow the lawn at least three times, and then after three times they can collect and use the clippings.
All right. And here's a question from Patty in Des Moines. My lawn is lumpy and uneven. Can I place dirt in these mini holes?
Yeah, that's a good question, Patty. Anything you can do to level it is always a good idea. It might be best to wait to a little bit of the cooler fall to go ahead and do that because it's going to be a hot process.
Right, difficult job.
Yeah, and the other thing is you'd want to go ahead and spread a little grass seed in those spots that you've filled with dirt. And so, going ahead and waiting till fall, you're going to have better grass seed germination and better chances of those filling in.
All right. She also says, I have full sun and a dog. What type of grass seed do you recommend?
Oh, wow. She's got it all going. some of the new Kentucky bluegrass varieties, get a sun mix would be good. And trying to get your dog to move around in the yard is always a good thing. Not easy, but a good thing.
All right. Here's Randy in Grinnell. Hi, Randy.
Hi there. I've got a heck of a crop of Creeping Charlie in the yard. I know you have to wait till the fall to spray it. We're going to take out a little bit of timber. I'm afraid when the dirt's moved around, all that Creeping Charlie is going to find new homes. So any suggestions on... we're going to do that in the month of June with the dirt moving it around. Any suggestions on what I should or shouldn't do? So when I seed it down this fall, Creeping Charlie may not be there then.
Yeah, so, Creeping Charlie is a big problem. It's a common perennial weed that causes a lot of headaches in Iowa. One of the things, if you're going to go ahead and move around dirt and disturb it, go ahead and try to put some sort of a herbicide on it to kill the ground ivy now before you move it and try to get ahead of it, and that should help clear some of that up.
Now, ground ivy does not have a deep or extensive root system, so what you see basically is what you get, and just make sure that you don't see any of those vining stems in the dirt or soil.
All right, and let's go next to Linda in Solon. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Hey, I've got a couple of fruit tree questions.
All right.
Or tunneling mammal questions. I don't know whether they're moles or voles, but they're out in the orchard. And do they eat the roots of young fruit trees?
Now, the mole basically lives in the ground, and it tunnels. And the very shallow tunnels, you can see because they lift up the ground. You can see the raised ridges.
Right.
They basically feed on earthworms and insects in the soil. So they really don't eat plant parts. Now, voles, with a V, those are small mouse-like creatures. Mm-hmm. And they feed on various things, seeds and things like that. As far as plant material, they're a biggest threat in the wintertime, when food is kind of scarce, and sometimes they will feed on the bark of young fruit trees, and sometimes they'll girdle the trees and basically destroy them. One way to prevent that is to put a cylinder of hardware cloth around the trunks of the trees so they can't get at the trunks. And you want to have that done by basically November 1.
Okay. So if there's an exit hole near the trunk of a tree, I don't need to worry that it's just tunneling. It's not eating the roots.
I'm not sure exactly what that would be. It would not be a mole because they never leave an opening into the ground. It might be a ground squirrel, possibly, because they definitely leave openings in the hole, in the ground.
Okay. Huh. One quick, we have an apricot tree, sun gold apricot tree that was in full bloom when those last 2 days of hard freeze hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it dropped all its leaves, dropped all its blooms. Nothing showing. Can we assume that tree is dead or any chance of it coming back?
It doesn't have a single leaf at this point, would you say? No leaves at all at this point?
Nope.
Well, not a very good thing. I would guess it's probably dead, but I would wait until July 1st before pronouncing it dead. So I would leave it a few more weeks.
All right. Wait for signs of growth. Linda, thanks for your call. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist, and Adam Toms, Iowa State University Extension turf grass specialist. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me today, Iowa State University Extension turf grass specialist Adam Toms and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Bill is up next in Sac City. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Charity, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is for Adam. You'd mentioned that if one is watering grass, it is best to water a half to three-quarters of an inch every 3 to 4 days. And I was wondering, what is the recommended watering protocol with newly seeded grass, and is straw mulch recommended?
Sure, that's a great question, Bill. And, you know, you're fighting an uphill battle right now with a newly seeded grass. A straw mulch would be good, a light straw mulch, just to kind of keep the moisture in the soil. The biggest thing, if you've just seeded in the last week, make sure that that surface doesn't dry out. You know, once you get a grass seed wet, you can't stop the process, so it's going to germinate, and it's either going to have enough moisture to grow, or it's going to dry out and die. And so the key there is to regularly water, you know, just irrigate just a little bit every day for the first 7 to 10 days till you get the grass up and going. Just making sure, you know, that you just keep that soil damp, not that you're soaking it and that there's water pooling, but just keep it damp for that first 7 to 10 days. And then after that, follow it up with a little bit deeper waterings.
Good. And I don't plan on planting it until the spring.
Okay.
Or until the fall.
Yeah, the fall.
Until the fall, which it has a cover crop on it right now. We had a major construction project go through our yard, so that's where I'm at on that.
Sure. Yeah, no, the fall is the perfect time. So, you know, and hopefully you'll get some well-timed rains this fall and have great luck.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Steve in Ankeny. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
So here's a story. I married into a family that is, I'd call them, you know, naturalist or whatever. They don't like the fertilizers and all the chemicals on the lawn. So I have a father-in-law and his brother that are pretty big gurus on this. Now, they've told me in the past that one of the things that keeps the weeds down for them is a water mixture with chewing tobacco in it. I was wondering if you've ever heard of anything like this before and if it's actually a thing or what would cause that to keep all the weeds down in your yard.
Well, as far as the chewing tobacco, tobacco has been used in the past as an insecticide, but as far as a herbicide, there would be no properties there that would help as far as weed control. Basically, with weed control, your main options are to physically remove them, and you definitely can if you have the time. Things like dandelions, plantain, you can dig it up. The other option basically is to use a broadleaf herbicide. So your options are kind of limited. Obviously, the best way to keep weeds out is to give the lawn very good care, proper care, and develop a nice, thick lawn. If you have a nice, thick lawn, the weeds have a harder time to establish themselves in that lawn.
All right. So don't put chewing tobacco on your lawn.
No, no.
No.
That's my takeaway there. All right. Next up, Dennis is on the line in Clive. Hi, Dennis.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering if a gentleman that's your guest there today could tell me what to put on it to control it and maybe get rid of it in the fall, of course, and it's not back next spring of next year.
What? Trying to get rid of what?
Clover fescue.
Okay. Clover fescue.
Yes.
Well, if you're referring to white clover, that's a very common plant in lawns, and many people are okay with it in their lawn. If you're not happy with it, I would use a broadleaf herbicide in the fall. Use a combination product that has like three or four different materials in the actual product. For example, 2,4-D does not do a very good job by itself of controlling clover. So you want a product that has maybe three different compounds in it. It might have 2,4-D in it. It might have MCPP in it. It might have dicamba. But you want a combination product and apply it in the fall of the year, and you should get fairly good control. But also realize that clover is a prolific seed producer. When you see those flowers, it also produces seed. So even if you apply it this fall, it's probably going to come back sometime next spring or summer from seed.
All right, Dennis, thanks a lot for your call. And next we will go to Christian. Hi, Christian.
Hello. I just had a question about tree suckers. I recently purchased a house, and they didn't really take care of the grounds very well. And I got, you know, they were coming up out of the base of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
I have some upwards to 2 inches thick that, I cut down. They're as low as I could, but, you know, they come back in masses when they start growing. So I was wondering if there's any way, I mean, if I can cut them closer to the tree itself or how to keep them from coming back.
Right. Suckers are typically those sprouts or shoots that originate near the base of the trunk of the tree. Certain trees tend to do it. For example, lindens oftentimes do it. Crab apples oftentimes do it. And when they come up, they're basically coming up from the plant itself, the parent plant. So you really can't use a herbicide on them. You can't, because that might damage the parent plant. So all you basically can do is to periodically cut them off. And I would cut them off as low as you possibly can whenever you need to.
Okay, I have them sticking up right now, maybe 3 inches off of the tree. But, I mean, they're too thick for my loppers, but can I just take a chainsaw and get as close as I can, maybe try not to damage the tree too much?
Well, I'd probably use a handsaw in that case if they're too big. But I'd probably go out there and cut them off just beyond the trunk of the tree if you can, if they're coming off the trunk.
Okay.
But use a saw rather than chainsaw, I think, in that case.
Okay.
All right, Christian, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Roger in Ringstead. Hello, Roger.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen and Charity. So I'm going to be planting an orchard this fall with some hazelnuts and aronia berries and stuff like that. And I'm curious as to what might be recommended for a ground cover between the rows, something that's not going to compete too much with the trees and shrubs, but something that's going to provide nice ground cover. And as a bonus, if I didn't have to mow it as much, that'd be nice as well. But I'll take what I can get.
Right. Probably bluegrass, actually. For example, in grape vineyards, we typically use like bluegrass. It's a nice ground cover. It's not as competitive as some other plant material. So something as simple as Kentucky bluegrass, actually.
All right. Although you got to mow that.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
All right. Kristen's up next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Kristen.
Hi.
What's your question?
We just recently planted some radishes in a raised bed about 3 weeks ago, and they're growing pretty strong. However, they're starting to get, some of the plants are getting this white tinge or pigment on the outside leaves, and they're starting to curl under. And my aunt, who's a master gardener, said that it could be something called a verticillium. and which is some sort of fungus, I guess, but they're still pretty strong. And we're not sure if it really could be that or if it's just something else.
Well, it's hard to say. It could be maybe a mildew, possibly powdery mildew. That grows on various plants, and it kind of coats the foliage with a white substance or material. And if it is, there's really not much you can do. I would say as far as the radishes, with the heat coming on this weekend, you'll probably want to harvest pretty soon anyway. So I'd probably just go ahead and harvest within the next week or so and see what you can get.
Okay. All right. And do we need to worry about the soil for trying to plant anything else after this?
No, shouldn't. No. Most plant pathogens are host specific, and something that would attack a radish, for example, would not attack, for example, green beans.
All right, Kristen, thanks a lot for your call. Here's a question from Carol in Gladbrook. She says, I have pole beans in one container garden and summer squash in a second. The containers were rinsed and the dirt is new in both of them, and I'm careful to water. In both containers, the plants have looked healthy and they've been growing well until last week. I then noticed the leaves look as if they'd been burned on the edges, loss of color and curling. There's no sign of a bug, but the plant leaves are browning and have stopped growing. Is this wilt? Can I fight it and bring these plants back to health?
Boy, I'm not sure what the issue is. I'm guessing it's probably not an insect or disease offhand. I think it's more soil-related. I don't know if maybe they got too much in the way of fertilizer, possibly, and they're burning at the edges, something of that type. I guess what I would do is the next time they need to water, really water thoroughly. And if there is maybe too much excess nutrients in the soil, they can kind of flush it away, hopefully, from the plants.
All right. And here's a question from Nancy in Ames. We rototilled our yard about a month ago because we had a heavy truck on it with a wood chipper and winch to pull out old volunteer trees and shrubs past their prime. We seeded with a nice mix of lawn fescues, some Kentucky bluegrass, and some annual ryegrass. Now we have a lot of crabgrass germinating. When can I do the following treatments? 1, post-emerge crabgrass herbicide. 2, dry insecticide for grubs. 3, 2,4-D and crossbow for stubborn broadleaves. 4, nitrogen fertilizer because I used a high P starter fertilizer.
All right, that's a good question.
It's a multiple.
That's a very thorough question. The yard's been in for a month. And so I assume that she's mowed probably.
Well, she says the new grass is about 3 inches tall and we have not mowed yet.
Okay. So I would say go ahead and mow it twice and then she could start to work on the crabgrass and spray a post-emergence after 2 mowings. And then as September comes around, go ahead and fertilize. But let's hold off on that right now because the young seedlings really don't need the nitrogen and the stress with that right at this moment. And then in the fall, also, she could go ahead and spray some broadleaf applications to attack some of those.
All right. How about dry insecticide for grubs?
Dry insecticide for grubs. I guess she could do that right now. They are possible to be out. Typically, the grubs eat at the roots, and the root system would be pretty young right now. And so I'm not sure that that's really a problem.
Okay. So maybe that one's just not necessary.
Yeah, I would just hold off on that.
All right.
Yep.
And let's go back to the phone. Sandy's on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Sandy.
Good morning. I have a question about a tree that I transplanted from my grandfather's 70-year-old tree. This tree is growing in our area where we have a cabin and land. It's growing, but so slowly. It's probably 3 years old. Can you recommend some type of fertilizer for this very old heritage transplant, I guess I'd say.
Okay.
It's not growing any higher, but yet it has really healthy leaves and strong, small little stalk or whatever.
And that's a good sign as far as a nice sturdy stem and nice foliage. Well, when you transplant a tree, oftentimes it takes a few years for that tree to reestablish itself. And during that period, it isn't going to grow very fast. So I wouldn't be terribly concerned about that. I don't think it needs fertilizer, but what I would do is if we have a dry June, July, August, make sure the tree has some water. So go out there maybe every 10 to 14 days and really soak it nice and well if you can or have someone do it. And that probably would be your best bet as far as encouraging it to grow.
Okay, so I still have hope even after 3 years.
Absolutely, yes.
That's encouraging. Thank you so much.
All right, Sandy, thanks a lot for your call. Susan is on the line next in Ames. Hi, Susan.
Hello. My question may have been answered. I have what appears to be some mildew on a begonia that's outside. The flowers look great. The leaves are in, they look healthy, except they've got that kind of grayish blue spots on them.
Well, it could be powdery mildew. We see it on everything from turf grass to lilacs to garden phlox to monarda. So it is found on various plants. As far as trying to control that, I guess I would try to maybe give the plant a little bit more sun and maybe a little bit better air circulation, because powdery mildew tends to be found on plants where you have poor air circulation, a very still environment, and maybe not enough sun. So I'd give a little bit more sun, and maybe it's going to go away by itself, hopefully.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. Bye-bye. Next up, we've got John in Cedar Rapids. Hi, John.
Hello. Accidentally sprayed, was spraying broadleaf treatment on a lawn and got too close to some trees at about a 10-inch diameter. And now they're kind of turning brown from the bottom up. And what do I do about it, or is there anything you can do about it?
You sprayed what type of material? Do you know?
Well, I think it's a Trimec or a Trichlor or something. I can't remember exactly the brand name.
Okay. And you just applied it to the ground?
Yes, but it must have, you know, it was real still that morning, but it still must have drifted along the bark of the base of these trees.
Okay. Now, normally when you have herbicide damage, what you see on the tree would be cupping, curling of the foliage, typically. You see that, usually not browning. And usually the effects are typically short-term. In most cases, the trees quickly recover. So you really can't do anything. I would basically sit back and see what happens. But you really can't do anything at this point. But usually, if there is simply a drift problem, the trees typically recover.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, John. Pat is up next in Manchester with a very quick question, I hope, Pat.
Yes. Good morning. I have a problem with a weed in my asparagus bed, and I believe it's called burdock, and it's kind of gotten out of hand there, and I was wondering if there's any way for me to control that or eliminate it altogether.
Well, I think you have two options. One would be to simply dig it up. I know that's not easy, but that would definitely be an option, and it should work. The other option would be, if you are still harvesting the asparagus, make your last harvest this weekend, and when you do so, cut every single asparagus stalk that's above ground, slightly below the ground, so no asparagus is above the ground, and then spot treat with Roundup.
All right, and if you're going to dig, dig soon. Don't let it get big, because it will get very, very big.
Huge.
All right. Richard Duran, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. Adam Toms, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
You've got your first hort day under your belt.
Yep.
Come back again.
All right, thanks.
Iowa State University Extension turf grass specialist Adam Toms. Of course, we'll be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.
Fresh air is next.